Welcome to the Gen Z Stoic Podcast,
where every week we strive to lead younger generations on a path to virtue through the insight of Stoic teachings and personal stories from our lives as Gen Z Stoics.
Welcome back to the Gen Z Stoic Podcast. I am your co-host, Mateo.
And I am your co-host, Ren. And today we're going to be talking about a topic that is really near and dear to us. And it is seven tips we have for teenagers, for younger people, for maybe parents of younger people, for their kids, to set them up for a successful life, set yourself up for a successful life. When we say successful, we don't mean, you know, be vastly wealthy, have nice homes, have nice cars, all of that possession, material wealth kind of things. Are those nice? Yes. Would we prefer, you know, that we possess those things? Of course. No person wants to live in squalor. But what we mean by successful today is living fulfilled and being content with your lot in life. And that is ultimately the Stoic approach to life. And so we have seven tips specifically today for people to get to that point, starting at a young age, because starting young is the key when it comes to being successful in life. Because when we act, you know, like we have so much time to live, as Seneca says, right? We live each day like we have an infinite number of days remaining, but we need to start young. And so that is the topic of today's video. And we'll start with tip number one, which I believe is the most important, and it kind of is broken down into three parts, and that is discover your personal morals and ethics, identify the people in your life who align with them, and then build your principles that uphold these morals and ethics with those people. So a three-step game plan here, where I believe this is the key to life. Identifying your morals and ethics and what you stand for as early as possible gives you an infinite amount of strength, because when you know what you stand for, yes, you know, it's going to be malleable and it's going to change throughout life, but at a basic moral ethical level, it doesn't change a whole lot. And so once you get to that point of knowing, you know, this is what I stand for, this is what I believe is right, this is what I believe is wrong, this is what I believe we should be doing in life, all of these sorts of big picture questions, the sooner that you can answer them, the sooner you can move forward in life and really nail down how you're going to move forward and uphold these things. And so the two keys to that are building principles and identifying people that help you get to those points. So, you know, you can have a diverse range of friends. There's nothing wrong with that, who have diverse beliefs, but you can't be really friends specifically with people who have different morals than you, because you run into a lot of conflict there. So, you know, if it's like political beliefs or things that aren't as major as, you know, like the big picture, like moral ethics, certainly fine. But you need to identify people in your life who align with you ethically, because you're not going to be able to, you know, move through certain situations in accordance with this friend if they don't align with you ethically. And then you also, again, if you're building principles with them, they're not going to mesh if you don't have the same kind of moral values and ethical values. And those principles are the tools that you can have to say, here's this situation I'm dealing with. Here's this principle that guides me through the situation according to the morals and ethics I have. And so once you build these things together, you have community and you have guidelines. And so you have a really disciplined approach to life. And that's something that is invaluable, especially if you're starting at a young age.
And I think it's important to say the friends we're talking about here, the close friends that we really trust and we really give ourselves to, because obviously we're going to go through life, we're going to meet a ton of people, and not every conversation is going to be, hey, what are your most valued, you know, morals and traits? We're not going to have that deep of a conversation with everybody, right? But the people that we really choose to, you know, identify with and move with daily, those are the people that we need to have the shared morals and values with. And it's super important, first off, like you were saying, to build and discover these principles that you are going to abide by. And the best way to do that is really just to be true to yourself, because it's very easy to be in a group of people and, you know, maybe, I don't know, give up one or two of those principles because they're your close friends. But, you know, that it's sort of like the compounding effect. You know, the amount of days you go, you know, over time are sort of going to compound that you're not abiding by those morals and principles, and you're going to kind of get farther and farther away from the person and the type of person that you want to be. So choosing those people to surround yourself with who, like you said, are, you know, living by those principles and by those values, that's super important. But I would say, you know, our step is to discover those. Well, how do you discover those? How do you really dig deep and, you know, find out what you like? Well, it's going to come with a lot of trial and error. I mean, you can, I guess I'll list one example. If one thing that's super duper important to you is religion, let's say you only want to surround yourself with people who believe in the universe or something like that, Okay. And they're, you're like, I don't associate with this group of people or this group of people, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. The people that you surround yourself with, are, you're going to want to make sure they're practicing the same things. But let's say that you don't really like that, you know, after a couple months, maybe even a year or two of practicing these values and moving with these people, like, ah, I don't really like that. Then you go try something else, you know, that's totally fine, because Stoicism is all about constant evolution. So it's not saying you have to find, you know, fixed morals and fixed values and stick to them forever. It's really about just being consistent with the ones you do have, but being willing to, you know, discover new ones. But I think the ones that cannot change are the ones that make you a good and moral person in general. And that's sort of what Stoicism is, right? You have the four cardinal virtues. You have wisdom and temperance and justice and courage. And those are four virtues that are kind of, you know, thread across all types of people that are trying to be good. And those are, you know, you don't compromise on those. Those cannot be taken away. Those cannot be, you know, neglected. Those are something that must be lived out every single day. So I think that's sort of the point we're trying to make, is some things will kind of, you know, move around here and there, but you should really have, you know, your four or five core principles to yourself that you never compromise for any group of people.
It's interesting you mentioned four or five, because the quote we always like to say is, you are the product of the five people closest to you. Something we both say very frequently, I feel like, and something that's rings very true. Now, necessarily, you don't have to, every person you come into contact in your life and you like go get lunch with or socialize with, you don't have to completely align morals, ethics. Like you said, you don't have to ask him, you're like, what are your ethics, sir? What are your morals? Things like that. It's a bit ridiculous. You sound kind of non-human robotic when you operate through life like that. But when you have those four or five people closest to you, whether it's friends, whether it's family, whether it's a significant other, that's the time when you have to have those conversations and build those morals and build those ethics, because the people that you're devoting all that energy to have to devote kind of the same energy to the same end goal. And if they don't have the same morals, the same ethics, they're probably not going to have the same end goal as you. And so you're kind of drifting away energy-wise and effort-wise. And that's something that's not really a productive relationship then. You want to have a productive relationship with those five people closest to you, because obviously the friendship should be you two building each other together. So you achieve your goals, your dreams together. You celebrate together. It's not like you have these toxic friendships or friendships that are steeped in degeneracy and doing stupid things that waste time. You don't want that. And the way you do that is this kind of three-step plan here. And also, to speak on energy a little bit more with the principles itself, we spend so much energy, right, determining how we view life, that we don't have enough energy left to really say, this is how I want to get there, right? If you're searching and you're walking throughout life and you're saying, what do I want from life? How do I approach life? What's right? What's wrong? You know, how do I treat other people? How do I view other people? You spend all that energy thinking about that. You never have the energy to actually apply these thoughts. You kind of become just like this, it's just a thought process, it's a mindset, and it's never action. That's not how life works. You know, we're very philosophical and academic sounding and all of these things. And, you know, it sounds like we're like high in the clouds and like we're always talking about ideas and mindset, but there's a large part of it that's action. And the way that you get to that action is by establishing all of these things early. Because I'll mention this a lot in today's episode, when you're 15, when you're 14, when you're 16, you're on borrowed time, because you don't have to pay for rent. You don't have to pay for groceries. You don't have to pay for a lot of things. The only thing your effort goes to is schooling, right? But schooling, we can diss on schooling all day. The only thing I'll say about it is it doesn't require a lot of effort if you are a little bit intelligent. Being successful at schooling does not require that much effort and time. So you're living on borrowed time because you don't have to pay for a lot of things and you don't have to spend a lot of time making money. So you have a lot of time to spend thinking about these specific things. So do it at that age when you have the time, you have the free time, you have the spare time, whatever you want to call it, rather than doing it when you're an adult. And then all that energy you're supposed to have for action is wasted on thoughts and like, how do I approach life? You need to get that figured out as soon as possible. And that's why it's step number one. And there's so many resources out there to do that. If we kind of transition into what I would say is tip number two, reading books. Books are one of the most valuable resources when it comes to figuring these things out, whether it's, you know, self-mastery. I'll plug Ryan's book here, 18-Year-Old's Guide to Self-Mastery, is just an example. Philosophy, self-help, all of these things, very psychology even, very helpful genres that we don't realize. Now, Gen Z does a really good job about reading. I don't know what the statistics are, but they're pretty impressive in terms of the amount that Gen Z reads, and not just like ebooks and things like that, but actual physical paper books. We do a really good job with that. So it's not something where I don't think it's something we really have to lecture on and say, we really need to do this. We're already doing that. But we need to read the right books, and we need to read the books that guide us to these places where you develop principles, where you say, oh, I haven't thought about this situation like that. Maybe that's a new moral code I have. Things like that, of that nature. Again, it goes back to that time, right? This is something I did personally, and I kind of got made fun of for it a little bit. But like going to school, and instead of paying attention to class, now this is not saying don't pay attention to class. We don't want to come across with that message. But I was blessed enough that I didn't really have to pay attention in class, probably because public education sucks and doesn't teach you anything. But I was able to bring books in the back of class. Even going to college, I read in lectures. You have this time, but you don't realize it. You spend it doing these things that, you know, you're going to parties or you're doing these social things, and there's certainly a time and place for that. But you have to realize that with all of this spare time, some of it has to be filled with accumulating knowledge that you can't learn in a classroom. And the way you do that is reading books. Because a classroom isn't going to teach you, you know, morals and ethics, especially public education in America. You're going to have to take an elective in college to learn about that. Identifying the people who really align with your values is a social skill that they're not going to teach you in education. Building your principles for success is something that's personal to you, and so they're not going to teach you that in education. But there are numerous books around the world with people's experiences who share with you what they've learned that we are missing out on, because we don't realize, you know, there's more to learning about life than what I'm learning in the classroom. And reading books is a key component of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of benefits that come from reading. You know, you become a better speaker and a better writer the more you read. Especially for you and I, that's super important on the podcast. You know, the more we read, the better we are at speaking, and we're better able to communicate to other people. Well, we are also better at writing, which is, you know, even though AI is sort of taking over writing, it's still important to be able to write by yourself and be able to read sophisticated literature. Yeah.
And I also think there is the aspect of knowledge as well. Not only becoming a better reader and writer and having all these, you know, literacy skills, but you become just more knowledgeable, right? When you read about ideology, when you read about history, that knowledge is very, very valuable. And again, it's something that we miss out on. So I just wanted to add that note in there as a benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty cool when people are talking about stuff and you're able to be like, oh, I know what that is. Like, I've read about that, or I've heard it. I mean, that just boosts, you know, kind of your presence in a room that you're in, and it boosts your credibility. People are like, oh, this guy kind of knows what he's talking about. Another big one is simply the retention of information. You know, you're able to remember things more, just develop your cognitive abilities and skills overall, which is huge, you know, especially today with how much we're just over consuming, you know, on social media and everything. It's very difficult to, you know, retain any sort of information. I mean, typically when we're, you know, scrolling through Instagram or TikTok, you couldn't name the last 10 reels that you watched, which is why it's literally a waste of time. You're just mindlessly doing nothing because it feels good, and it takes no will, you know, work, you know, it takes no mind strengthening or thought or anything like that. But the thing that's really interesting about books, that, you know, it's a pretty simple idea, and it's not anything that anybody hasn't ever said before, is you have, you know, hundreds and hundreds, and in some cases thousands of years of knowledge at your fingertips, just written down. And so I don't get why you wouldn't want to, you know, learn about it and learn from other people who were alive in very different time periods, and take their advice and take their skills and take their messages and apply them, you know, bits and pieces that you resonate with to your own life, because that makes you a more holistic person. Especially as a Stoic, Stoics were all about the pursuit of knowledge and wisdom as well. That was something that they emphasized greatly. I mean, there probably obviously weren't as many books back then as there are now. So if Stoics were alive now, they'd be just reading, 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 reading. There's so many texts that we can look at and resonate with and learn from and become, you know, mentally, we can build our mental fortitude essentially from books. You know, this is what I have actually to say about people who don't advocate for reading. You know, Andrew Tate says, you know, reading's a waste of time. You know, you don't need to be reading. You need to be hustling and making money. You have these, you know, and we'll get into this later, but this toxic hustle culture in a way that's saying, you know, oh, money, money, money. But Stoicism is never about money. Stoicism is about building an eternal, you know, an internal and eternal foundation for yourself that is defined by more than just a monetary value. And so what I think, to my final piece, at least on books, is if you don't know you don't have to read a Stoic text for it to be good. You can read any sort of book. Any exercise of reading is going to be good for you. So find what you like. I would definitely say, you know, pick up some self-help books, pick up some self-development books, or if you're into finance, pick up some finance books. Do whatever you are interested in. There are books for every single interest in the world. I can promise that. Pick up a book. 5 to 10 minutes a day is better than none. I mean, replace, 20 minutes of scrolling with 20 minutes of reading, and I guarantee your life will slowly begin to get much, much better over time.
Yeah, and Stoics had a lot to say about reading. Seneca was a very, very avid reader, and when you read his letters, he's always conveying one piece of information that's not from himself. It's, from Epicurus or from another philosopher from his time. And it just highlights, the apparent need of reading, right? When you have somebody who's as intelligent as Seneca and he's saying, I have much to learn and I'm distributing this information that I've read to other people because it's something I myself have learned from. I like the quote. He says, "Each day acquire something that will fortify you against poverty, against death, indeed against other misfortunes as well. And after you have run over many thoughts, select one to be thoroughly digested that day. This is my own custom. From the many things which I have read, I claim some part for myself." And that's exactly what reading is supposed to be. When you are reading, you talked about retention. Every book you read, like, there is something in there for you to learn. It might be hard to discover at first, but there's something for you to retain, apply to your life, and carry on with you for the rest of your life, right? And, whether it's self-help and it's this really crucial life lesson, or even in like fiction, you have fables that teach lessons and fiction that teaches like social customs and things like that, that teach culture. So it's a little bit deeper than many people think, but, even if it's fiction, nonfiction, whatever you are reading, like you said, there's, a book for every interest somebody can have in the human experience. But whatever you're reading, be sure to read it actively and take one thing from it, at least one thing from it that you can apply to your life. Now, if, in our experience, philosophy, self-help, we've taken much more from that than we have from fiction or other genres. But it's kind of a to each their own, right? We each have our own individual experiences. We each have what we're dealing with. And so there's different books that are going to help us through it, right? And so many other books that are just like the kind of staples, right? That whenever you see on social media, like, these are the 5 books that men need to read or that people need to read to be successful. They're all very helpful books. So, if you're looking for somewhere to start, when those recommendations are made to you, take it in stride. That's probably one thing that social media is contributing positively to your life, and read those books and learn from them, actively learn from them. And, if we wanted to do a comparison, right, we spend so much time on social media nowadays. You scroll. What do you learn from that? What do you learn from those experiences, those reels you see, the TikToks you see, that you can then go apply to your life? And it's like, wow, this taught me something. This really helped. There might be life hacks or something, and that's cool. Like, great. But rather than spend that hour scrolling on your phone, right, go out and pick up a book. Pick up a book that somebody else's lived experience encapsulated within these pages, and then go and take their experience and apply it to yours and learn something. It's a very valuable skill and something that being young affords you a lot of time to do. And that's why it's the most crucial time to take advantage of reading at least 10 books.
And I think, 10 books is probably a good number, and I would say if you were to read 10 books, at least try maybe for 10 books a year, right? There's nothing wrong with setting goals for reading, and each level is going to be different for each person, reading level. Some people read slow, some people read fast. But yeah, I would say I agree with you. I would say set a goal to read maybe a book every month. So maybe a little more than 10 books a year, but it's a good goal to have. Something that's interesting about reading too is, and this sort of connects into our next tip for people is,
be sure to be able to name those 10 books though. Be able to name them.
Yeah. Don't read 10 books, and then say, oh, I don't really remember what I read. Find 10 books that you really like and really take in the information and really retain the information so that you carry that with you, for the rest of your life, essentially. But what I was going to say is, reading, and like you said about culture, that's super important, because especially when we read about culture or history or just other parts of the world, which philosophy really does, philosophy kind of you can find all over the world, Eastern philosophy, Western philosophy and whatnot. But the bigger picture that I'm trying to paint here, and this is for our next tip, is we recommend highly that you travel outside your home country. Now, we understand that this may not be financially feasible for every Gen Zer in today's world. However, by no means am I, and I'll use myself as an example, by no means am I wealthy or am I like super well off or is my family or where I came from. But through a lot of work, you know, and just time spent working and earning money and saving and being smart, I was able to finance my own trip, you know, for almost 2 weeks to Europe with my friends. So it is possible. It just takes time. But if you are in a situation where you can't, you know, travel outside your state, or, you know, maybe, or if you live in Europe, travel within your state somewhere to different cities and whatnot, travel. And here's why. There are two big things that I want to say about traveling. One, it's interesting because the Stoics were sort of sensitive when it came to traveling. Actually, I looked this up. They call it wanderlust. And the one thing that Stoics said about traveling was it, you know, their original response to wanderlust, you know, is why they ask, why are you traveling? Why are you traveling? Is it because you're trying to escape yourself? Or are you trying to pursue something, you know, external that you can't find within yourself? And so Stoics would argue against wanderlust because they're saying you're fleeing yourself. You're looking for something more outside of yourself. But I do not think that Stoics would be against traveling for the purpose of learning something and for educational purposes, you know, immersing yourselves in new culture so you can learn about it, or just traveling to learn a new language or whatnot. Now, I traveled to Italy and Spain with my friends, and while we did have a great time and it was definitely a vacation, we also learned a lot about the cultures and the cities and the people and the language and the food and everything where we were at. So the second thing is it really puts the world into perspective for you, because before I had traveled, I mean, I had an idea of what the world was like, but I never really understood what it was until I had been there, until I had been outside of the US. And you were saying this earlier, Ren, but there's when you travel, you really realize that there's a lot of things that you appreciate or underappreciate and overappreciate where you live. And I'll let you talk about that, and then I can give my two cents. But that's definitely proven to be true. You know, after going to Europe for not even that long, you know, just under 2 weeks, there are definitely things that I realized I was underappreciating, and there are things that I realized I was overappreciating.
Yeah. So that's actually the main thing when I bring this tip up, why it's important. So to talk about really Stoicism first, Seneca letter 28, I believe, is about travel. And he's talking about travel as kind of like a remedy for being discontent. And there are people who travel the world and go and see these amazing things because they're broken on the inside and they want to like fill a void within themselves, right? I'll see if I can find a quote here that really encapsulates this. He says, "Do you ask why such flight does not help you? It is because you flee along with yourself. You must lay aside the burdens of the mind. Until you do this, no place will satisfy you." Right? And that's kind of about the motivations of travel, right? If you're doing travel as like this luxurious thing because you're like, oh, you know, I need a vacation, or I'm not feeling great, so I'm going to go to some other foreign country or something of that nature, then there becomes an inherent problem of you avoiding your problems and not dealing with them appropriately. Over the value of travel and the value of traveling outside your home country, especially for us being based in the United States, is like you said, that overappreciation and underappreciation. Other countries, other cultures have very different values. And so there's two things about that. Realizing the inherent, right, the inherent appreciation for every society, every culture's values, and saying, you know, like this may be, you know, opposed to what I believe in, or this may be starkly different than what I believe in. If you look at like how people live in Africa, or how the Chinese operate and the values that Chinese citizens have versus the values in America, you know, it's due to government structures, it's due to culture, it's due to a wide variety of things. But being able to experience those values and those experiences is extremely valuable, especially as a young person, because then you don't have like this kind of soul vision of like, this is what life is like, right? And you have perspective. We talk about perspective being one of the most powerful things you have, and it's perspective over your own life. But you want to make that perspective as nuanced as possible and as informed as possible. And so traveling to, you know, the opposite end of the world to just see how they live and appreciate and really truly live that culture, see how it is very valuable. Because especially in America, right, like we have like these freedoms and these values, and, you know, we're very individualistic, it seems like. And, you know, we're especially becoming secular as a nation now, kind of a side note, but interesting side note. And all of these things kind of add up to the American's perspective. And then if you go and talk to like Europeans or people about their opinions of Americans, it's like they're rude, they're disrespectful, right? Like they care about themselves way too much. There's not an emphasis on community. And so you see those kind of things play out and you get that kind of perspective, right? Like think about Japan and Asian countries where the tradition is, you know, multiple generations of the family live in one household. Versus in America, in the Western world, it's kind of a race to get out of your household. You say, I want to live in a place by myself as soon as possible. I want to buy my own place. I want to have my own space, where that's not the tradition in a lot of places. But we don't stop and think about those things, right? We say, well, this is how it is where I live, so this is how it must be. And traveling outside of your home country, or even just traveling to different places, you know, you talked about financial feasibility, and neither of us is vastly wealthy and has the resources to go on constant trips. We've gone on a few trips, you know, here and there. Both of us have our individual trips and perspectives, but just traveling as much as possible to gain those perspectives is the right thing to do. Again, it adds up to you have a lot of spare time when you were young. You have a lot of time to really develop these values, develop that perspective. And so to do that fully, you have to be a cosmopolitan, right? You have to travel the world. You have to see how we are one human community. You can't just have one American community or one Canadian community or one European community or Asian community. You can't have that. You have to have that world community. That's an inherently Stoic value, right? The cosmopolis. So when the best way to establish that in that cosmopolitan sense, right, is traveling and fully realizing that. And then the final note I'll make about that is the relationships you build through that. The book I read by Ray Dalio about principles, and he's a very famous Wall Street investor. He highlights the story of how his son went to China and they built a lot of relationships in China, and that really helped him launch his business. And, you know, you shouldn't obviously be going to these countries with business in mind and saying, this is how I'm going to profit from the situation. But building those relationships with people all across the world is inherently valuable to your life, because then you have, you know, a place to stay. If you want to go to Australia, you have a place to stay because you know this family and their family friends. Or, you know, you go to Europe and you have these connections so you can see cool things, or you get to meet cool people. And it's kind of this thing, you see a lot of successful people nowadays, and I'm talking about success in terms of money, are hanging out with different people all across the world. So the common denominator here is if these people are very successful, they're very wealthy, and, you know, they're traveling to Dubai, they're traveling to Europe, they're traveling to the United States, they're traveling to South America, they're traveling the world, and they're meeting all these cool people, then we see that this is what the human experience should be. When money is not an object, you have all the money in the world, when your choice is, I'm going to travel the world and I'm going to meet all these cool people, then it's shown then that, yes, this is the right way to live. Like, this is what we should strive for, because it provides us with this value perspective, these valuable experiences, and really connects us with valuable people as well.
I'd like to speak to that. And I think, well, when I was in, when I had that experience in Europe, I kept in touch with at least five people that I met out there, you know, from different countries and different experiences. And one thing, not only is that important for, you know, you could look at it in a very shallow sense, be like, oh, for business, you know, good connections, like you got people, but also just if you were to go out there again to experience more, you have someone who knows about the culture and who knows about that area and can show you more than just if you were to, you know, look at it and try and interpret it for yourself. You know, you have somebody who can guide you, who can really, really explain something to you, you know, things that they find important. And then you meet more people and whatnot. So it's, and when people say, you know, it's not about what you know, it's about who you know, there's definitely a part of that that's true. You know, the who you know is oftentimes more important than what you know, but you definitely should still know things. That's also equally as important. I don't want to diminish the value of knowing things versus knowing people. Both are equally as important, but putting more emphasis on knowing people right now, you know, that's what can really get you around when you start to travel outside. You know, you're saying, oh, I actually know a guy out in Berlin or something, and he can help us with this or and whatnot, things like that. They are very valuable and they cannot be bought. And so when you go out, like you said, one, going out to a place for financial gain for business, or don't go out to somewhere just to have, you know, just for pleasure purpose. Now, there's nothing wrong with a vacation, but, you know, simply going out, right? Let's say you were, I don't know, Ibiza, right? And now this is a pretty extreme example because everybody knows why people go to Ibiza. But if you were to go to Ibiza simply for the pleasure and just completely, you know, ignore, you know, the culture or the architecture or failing to learn something, that's where Stoics would be like, okay, maybe you kind of wasted your time a little bit. And I would agree. I think there's, you know, there's definitely a balance. You know, there's Stoics weren't against pleasure, but they were all about the moderation and, you know, not letting it consume you. So when you travel, one, don't be afraid to have fun, you know, let loose a little bit. You go on a vacation and whatnot, but also learn something. Try and, you know, try and provide value to somebody out there. Try and get some new connections. Try and meet new people. Try and learn about the culture. It really is life-changing, because as soon as I came back, it almost felt like I never went, except I have all this knowledge of what it actually is like over there. And it's just something that I would recommend to everybody. While we're young, you know, money comes back. Don't pinch your pennies. And this is what one of my good friends told me, is I'd rather not pinch my pennies right now and just gain experience and do cool things and have fun and, you know, travel and gain, like you said, learn stuff. So that's sort of my last comment on that. Just reiterating again and again, money comes back, but time doesn't, and the memories don't, and the knowledge, that's all, you know, you can't buy it. You can't get it back. So you might as well do it while you can.
Yeah. And if I can clarify on that, spending money for virtuous purposes, right? Like if we're spending an exorbitant amount of money as a young person on like clothes and shoes and things that you think will like make you cool or something like that, kind of a waste. Being cool is extremely overrated. Gaining experience is not. So spending your money, like you said, on trips to gain culture and see the world, you know, spending your money on charitable causes, spending your money on side hustles, spending your money on things that are purposeful and virtuous, there is no better time to do it exorbitantly than when you are young and when you have the time to make the money back. But if we can kind of transition to our fourth tip here, it is take care of your physical health. And now this one, pretty basic, but there's a lot of elements to it. When we say take care of your physical health, obviously, we talk about it all the time. I mean, Mateo and I are big into the gym, big into gym culture. So exercise, whether it's lifting, whether it's cardio, whatever exercise takes form in your life, that is very important, as well as diet and nutrition, sleep, what you consume. All of these things add up to taking care of your physical health. Now, the Stoics, we're not necessarily on board with taking care of your physical health just to look nice or just for, you know, physical health's sake, but they were advocating for physical health in the sense that your body is the vessel for your soul and to live a virtuous life. So we should take care of it so that we can go out and act virtuously. And that principle, you know, it's very sound. Right? As a young person, you are setting up the foundation for how you feel, how your joints feel, you know, how healthy you are when you're an adult. So getting sleep, being properly hydrated, you know, eating nutritious things, getting all those nutrients that you need, and then exercise, you know, taking care of your body. All of these things are very important when you are young, because again, it's that foundation, and it's how you grow. It's how, you know, your mind grows. There's so many things, you know, we're not obviously qualified, you know, personal trainers or nutritionists or anything like that. So we really stay away from, you know, saying specific recommendations or like health benefits or things like that, because it's not really what the podcast is about. And we're not really qualified to talk on those things. But taking care of them in a way that, you know, is researched and is personal to you is very important. And it's something that we're both very passionate about. I'll let Mateo talk a little bit more about the nutrition aspect, but especially in today's era where a lot of our foods are processed, a lot of bad things are in the food and water that we drink and we consume. And being aware of these trends and what they are doing to the human population is very important, as well as the exercise and obvious things when it comes to physical health.
Yeah. And so, like you said, we're both super passionate about this stuff. And disclaimer, if you missed it, we're not professionals. We don't have PhDs. We don't have doctorates. You know, we've researched our own and we've listened to experts. Huberman Lab, shout out real quick. That's a big source of information. If you haven't checked out the Huberman Lab podcast, definitely look at his stuff. He does tools, science-based tools for everyday life, and they are very helpful. Quick promotional, but not sponsored. We just like it. Getting back to our message. So the Stoics were all for good physical health. Why? They called it staying in fighting shape. A Stoic idea is it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in war. So basically all it, you know, they obviously didn't believe in going to war, but keeping yourself in fighting shape was essentially the analogy for, you know, always being fit, physically fit in case you really, really need it. You know, Seneca says, this is a paraphrasing of the quote because I don't remember it verbatim, but he says, you know, it's a shame for man to grow old without realizing the power of his body or his strength. Absolutely true. And that's something I will 100% agree with until the day I die. we have a lot of people who are like, oh, there's no really point in exercising. I mean, we're going to die anyway. I mean, why not just enjoy my life? Well, that's a little bit shameful. And you're being lazy because physical health. And I think the reason physical health is a very hot topic in the United States today is because we have two sides of a spectrum of physical health here, right? We have the people who are very, very, very fit and look down upon people who are, you know, not in our, these people are labeled fat phobic. But then we have the people who do not work out at all, you know, and or, and they're, you know, very two ends of the spectrum, right? So you have like fat phobic and then you have like obsessed crazy gym bro, basically. Or no, that's the same side. Anyways, the point I'm trying to make is the nutrition aspect is something that will serve you very well in this, because as much as it is important to run or to lift weights or to keep your heart rate up, what's more important is about what you're fueling yourself with. While we're young, we can kind of get away with it a little bit, right? I mean, you can go to football practice or you can go to the gym and then go to McDonald's and get 2 3-quarter pounders after and you're like, yeah, I'm fine. But building these habits of good eating now are going to pay off, pay dividends in the future. Because if you're in that habit, then you know you're 30, 35 years old, you hit a lift, go to McDonald's, and you have a heart attack because you've been doing it for so long. That's not good. There's a lot of things that we eat today that we don't realize. And like I said, traveling to Europe really helped me realize this, but that are ultra processed, you know, they're seed oils or they're high in fat or processed sugar or carcinogenous chemicals that, that aren't even real. You know, a piece of bread has like 50 ingredients. And you're like, I'm pretty sure you just need water, yeast, salt, and whatever. And so you really have to pay attention to what you're eating, because healthy people are getting very sick very easily. And you're like, how is that possible? You know, I eat clean, you know, I eat my fruits, I eat my vegetables and whatnot, but I'm still getting sick. Why? Well, not to take a diss at the American food system and big pharma, but to take a diss at them, it's really more about, you know, business and making money than it actually is about our health. And so unfortunately, it's become very, very expensive to eat high quality, you know, not processed foods. And that's a struggle for a lot of people. But it is possible. You know, you can go to your Whole Foods, you can go to a Trader Joe's, you can go anywhere and you can find grass-fed, you can find organic. Do these things. Because over time, and we've seen this, and Huberman talks about this in many of his episodes, but, you know, not eating processed foods, simply removing all these bad things from your diet will cure, you know, up to like 90-95% of your health problems. And it's such a big thing to emphasize. And I feel terrible for the people that are unaware, but we're trying to bring awareness to this issue. It's not really even a Stoic thing. You know, Stoics believed in nourishing your body, but you have to be aware that sometimes the diets and the fads and the trends that, you know, the internet and social media says that we're nourishing our body, it's not true. You know, stick to the facts, stick to the simple whole foods and nourish your body that way. I'm very passionate about this in case you couldn't tell, but it's super important, and it's something that not a lot of people are aware of, or they are aware and they can't afford it, which is even more sad because the good stuff is expensive. But
yeah, and to speak on that as well, right, if you're doing all these habits, right, like you're building your principles, you're reading books, you're acquiring that knowledge, but you feel sluggish and you're operating at like 80%, let's say 80% of your physical capacity, which also translates to your brain's function and cognition, then you're not going to achieve everything you want to set out to do, right? We want to maximize our potential. Like you mentioned that Seneca quote, we want to maximize our potential. And the way we do that is by viewing ourselves as a holistic being who, you know, needs exercise, but also needs to be properly hydrated, also needs to eat good, nutritious food that, you know, doesn't have seed oils in it, isn't processed to all get out, and doesn't have these negative side effects that we see. And we also need sleep. And we also need a bunch of other things. And you have to look at physical health as a holistic thing rather than just like you said, you know, if I hit a lift, let me go grab some canes real quick and then I'm going to down it with like a gallon of lemonade and I'm chilling. So that's not how it works. And, you know, we're both very passionate about it because if you look at, you know, the statistics, you look at the obesity problem in America, you watch some of the documentaries about how processed food works in America, how the food industry works in America, and you see, you know, the day-to-day results again with that obesity crisis, it's a very important issue that we are missing. And it's unfortunate that you talk about those two camps where both camps are wrong, but it's unfortunate more so in my sense that we have people who speak about things like this and they use the exact vocabulary we're using, and then they do get labeled fat phobic. And it's a very unfortunate narrative we have going on, especially in this country, like this country specifically. There's nothing wrong, you know, with being a little bit overweight. Everybody has their specific health, you know, things going on, problems that we don't know about. And so it's wrong to judge, but it is also wrong to kind of cry wolf on people who say that we as a country need to get generally more healthy and less obese. There should be no problem with saying that. And it's something that we are missing out on. And so, you know, if you're a parent or you're a teenager and you're feeding your kid McDonald's, you're eating McDonald's, there's nothing wrong with a cheat day. Don't get me wrong. I still eat McDonald's, you know, every once in a while. So there's nothing wrong with a cheat day, essentially. But you want to have as good habits as possible. You know, sitting here and saying, you know, you need to have, you know, this nutritious diet that, you know, never incorporates fast food whatsoever is going to be pretty unrealistic starting out. Do you want to get to a point where that's your reality? Certainly. But it's kind of building those baby steps. And again, just like everything, you don't want to, you know, use this time where you think that you can get away with it to fill your body full of terrible things. You want to build that foundation so that when you are an adult and your body can't really afford to take that beating anymore, you have the habits that support your body, support your health, and really support your ability to function at 100%, because that's what is vitally important. When you eat these terrible foods, when you don't get enough sleep, when you don't drink enough water, when you aren't taking certain supplements that maybe will help you out, then you feel sluggish. You feel like you're operating at 75%. You feel tired. If we want to talk about seed oils, you feel anxious. You feel more depressed. And these are things that can be easily avoided if you just paid more attention to your physical health. It's something that's 100% within your control. And it's why something that is so vitally important. If it's 100% within your control, right? And it's you know, affecting your ability to live to your potential and to operate at 100%, then fix it, man. Fix it. That's, you know, and there's one final aspect that I'll mention about physical health, and it more relates to the exercise and the working out, and that is discipline. It takes a lot of discipline to say, I'm going to consistently get 8 hours of sleep. It takes a lot of discipline to say, I'm going to drink X amount of water. It takes a lot of discipline to say, I want to eat X amount of protein per day. I want to eat X amount of calories. I want to cut out this part of my diet. It takes a lot of discipline to say, I'm going to get up and go work out today. All of those things take a lot of discipline. And so it's a habit that, you know, really affects your physical health and so your ability to function. But on the kind of, you know, less apparent side, it really improves your ability to be disciplined. Because if you can have that routine that says, I'm going to sleep 8 hours today, I'm going to wake up and go to the gym, I'm going to eat 3 solid healthy meals that incorporate, you know, all the nutrients I need, and I'm going to drink a lot of water today. That's a very disciplined approach to life. And soon, if you're taking care of yourself in that disciplined manner, soon that discipline applies to other things. You know, your business ventures, you're very disciplined, you're very consistent. I think that's something that we both recognize as we progress in our gym journey, as we become more and more disciplined with that. And so we become more consistent to each other and with the podcast and in every arena of life. So it's very translatable. Not only, you know, just taking care of your physical health, you know, obviously boosts your physical capabilities and your mental capabilities and your ability to function 100%, but it also boosts your ability to be disciplined and really push through hard things, things that are uncomfortable, things that maybe aren't your preferred method, but are ultimately what's going to pay off in the end.
And we're going to get into that in a second for the fourth or the fifth tip here. But one, the last closing few remarks that I want to say about physical health is, one, I do not understand people who do not want to be in their best physical shape all the time. I understand that it's hard, but I also understand that it's even harder to feel like garbage every day and to sluggishly, you know, hardly crawl through every day of your life and feel like garbage and be tired, you know, and just never feel good. To me, that is way harder than just putting in a little bit of work every day to be your best. And also for us, and if you listen to this and you're an avid gym goer, maybe not even avid, but you're a runner or you're a lifter and you exercise in some way, you know how good it feels during and after. You learn to fall in love with it. And scientifically, we know it boosts your endorphins and you feel better. That's just science, right? So you kind of have to choose which path you want to take. You want to take easy now and really difficult later, or do you want to take the little difficult steps now and then have, you know, your discipline lined up for you down the road that's going to pay off? Two, the people that are saying, you know, it's fat phobic to go to the gym, and if you work out for how you look, you're fat phobic and whatnot, that needs to go away completely. We can all acknowledge that that's absurd. That's stupid and it's really just an excuse to be lazy. Now, I'm going to say this. We should treat everybody with respect no matter what. We should never walk around, you know, and look at a fat person and be like, ha, you're fat. Like, that's not the goal, and that's not the concern here. The concern is physical health. It's not about how you look. Now, definitely there are perks to lifting, right? And you see muscles, and you're like, ha, like I've got big biceps now, right? But the reason that we're so concerned with obesity is not because of how you look. It's because it's very chronically unhealthy, and it leads to a lifetime of difficulties that nobody should ever have to go through. So that's where our concern is coming from. And I feel like where a lot of people's concerns are coming from with just morbid obesity and rising obesity rates is it's not about how you look. It's simply just about your ability to function healthily as a human. So we just want to put that out there. It's not about what's on the outside. It's literally about what's on the inside. And then the last thing is just, go ahead.
Well, and the way that I think we properly view that is, you know, like you're talking about when you lift and you start to see the muscles, you start to see the definition, that's your personal reward. So the only person who like you share that with is yourself. That's your personal reward. So, you know, putting others down because you look better than them extends outside of that. And so it becomes something that's a misuse of that. So like, you're exercising and you're eating healthy and you feel better. Enjoy that, you know, celebrate that with yourself, but don't put other people down because they haven't done the same things you have. And exactly. The other thing that I wanted to add as well with like the uncomfortability aspect is you talked about like the experience of like feeling really good after you lift or something like that. There's also the experience of, you know, when you lift and like you're really pushing it, you're pushing it to failure and it's really difficult, you know, it's painful, it's sore. And then once you leave the gym, it's kind of like, I've done my hard thing for the day. Like this was really uncomfortable. This took a lot of hard work. So when something else difficult presents itself, I'm like, oh, that's not so bad. Like I already tackled it this morning when I went to the gym. So that's why I advocate for people to go to the gym more towards in the morning. And it's also something, you know, I've seen on a lot of podcasts, a lot of kind of like the masculinity sphere where people are talking about that. But something very valuable is that kind of perspective of not even exercising, but like doing these things that take discipline and take hard work. All of a sudden, like when you're like, oh, I did this in the morning and really, you know, it was easy. Like I got through it. And all of a sudden, you know, something hard presents itself, like your boss gives you a difficult task at work or like school, a paper doesn't go so well. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, you know what? I got through it this morning. It was really hard. It was physically uncomfortable. This is just mental, man. Like I got this. And that's something I think, again, is an underrated aspect of physical health.
Well, and that was basically what my next point was going to be, was just, you know, the when you're in the gym, you learn how to push past failure or push to failure, or you learn how to run to failure. You learn how to CrossFit to failure. Like it literally doesn't matter. You learn, and that's no hate towards CrossFit. I'm trying to think of an example and include every kind of physical fitness here, but you learn how to push your physical limit, push past and push to your physical limits. That is the fundamental start. And this is a great transition into tip 5, which is embracing things and experiences that are uncomfortable. Pretty simple. And we probably won't spend too much time here because we sort of covered a lot about this already, but it's a very simple principle. It's not easy to follow, but it's a very simple idea, like a lot of Stoic teachings. The more that we are able to embrace and endure and just walk through things that are uncomfortable willingly because we understand that they're going to grow us, you just become a stronger person overall. It's inevitable, right? You see, and an example I'll use of this is, you know, in America now, we're very, very comfortable. We don't really have to be uncomfortable for any purpose. You know, our generation's soft. You know, we're the softest, you know, most offended, you know, weakest generation of all time. Like it's crazy. Flashbacks like the 20s when the Great Depression was happening, when people didn't have a choice to be uncomfortable or not. You know, you had the Dust Bowl, you know, you had the famine, you had no money and they had to struggle to survive and they were hardly eating at night, you know, going to bed hungry and they were struggling. Now, I'm not saying we should put ourselves in those situations, but the point that I'm trying to make is that uncomfortability, you know, allowed that generation to become more resilient and to become stronger and to, you know, to move forward. Now, when we aren't immersing ourselves in struggle, we're not really moving forward as a generation. We're sort of known as this generation's in trouble, or this generation's going to be like the last good generation. And then everything's just going downhill from here. We don't want to be known as that generation. We need to put ourselves in these uncomfortable situations so we can simply just be resilient. It seems like the three characteristics that are super important, you know, being resilient, being disciplined, and just being hardworking are not present anymore. You know, we don't have to do these things. We can just sit and be lazy and click a button and have whatever we want. But that's not how the world works. Traveling back to that point helps you realize that, that it's really not that easy for a lot of people. A lot of people have to hustle and work really hard, and they're uncomfortable a lot of times throughout the day in their lives. And it's very hard for them, but they're resilient and they're strong. And all they could dream of is what we have. So we need to start realizing that while, yes, we don't have to be uncomfortable, in order to grow as individuals, we need to be.
Yeah. Like you said, we've talked about, you know, adversity and being uncomfortable, doing hard things, things that a lot of people wouldn't want to do and actively avoid. So I'll keep it short as well. But the thing I think about is the backbone of this country is the, you know, the people who have built our infrastructure, who work 70 hours a week, you know, do backbreaking work, build our roads, build our buildings, do all these things, these blue collar jobs that we underappreciate. However, I think a lot of people think that the backbone of this country is like politicians and these people who we see doing the work, right? But there's a reason we see them doing the work. It's a photo op. Like they're not putting in the hard work. The backbone is the people who are doing those things that are extremely difficult. So I won't say that you should seek out these things, but living life, they naturally happen. Like you're not going to live life and adversity is never going to come to you. The advice here is that when adversity happens, you know, I think even as a teenager, you're going to face adversity of some sort. Don't run away from it. Don't see, oh, how can I get out of this? How can I avoid this? How can I make this easier? Just accept it for what it is and get through it. Because like you said, you used the analogy for physical health, but if you make things really difficult now and you get through the difficult things and you put in the hard work now, then when you are 30, when you are 40, life becomes suddenly very, very easy because you've put in the work. And you've gotten to the place where you can live comfortably now because you sought out these uncomfortable things, because you conquered the uncomfortable things. But the more you put them off, the longer you don't conquer them, you know, the more they build up and soon you're drowning in it. You're 35, you're 40, and these terrible things are happening to you and you have this midlife crisis. That's what I believe the phenomenon of midlife crisis is when things got hard when you were young, you avoided them. You put them away, you kick them down the road, and now all of a sudden they've added up and they've come knocking and you're in the middle of your life and you don't know how to deal with it because you've never become used to dealing with hard things. So that's the advice here is, you know, you don't have to seek out, you know, obviously you don't have to go seek out things that are really uncomfortable, you know, outside of the box, like painful, like none of that. But when it happens to you, have the mindset of this is a blessing. Like this is something that I just have to accept for what it is and I'm going to find a way to get through it. And it's going to teach me a valuable lesson so that my road ahead is easier. Don't always seek out the easy thing. You know, when something's happening, right? Like if we had to use the podcast as an example, things haven't always been easy for the podcast. Like there's been times where we've really plateaued and it's been tough, right? And like, wow, is this really worth it? Like, are we going to blow up? No, but we've had the confidence and we keep working through it. We don't, you know, seek the easy way out and say, oh, who can we pay to like get followers or things like that? You know, like we're putting in the work. And, you know, we still have that 100% belief that it's going to pay off one day. So just to use us as an example, trying not to be praiseworthy or anything, just seeking out the hard things and accepting them for what they are and not saying, you know, this sucks. Why is life like this? But saying, nope, this is a natural part of life. Let's deal with it. So the next day is easier. And that's kind of my final note on that. Not really a clean transition here to our sixth tip, but one that, again, we have talked a lot about. So we are going to keep it short as well, but reducing social media consumption. Now, I'll just say one thing on this. Reducing social media consumption does not mean abandoning social media. In today's age, that's virtually impossible. But my advice is when you are using social media or you're just using any technology, keep it as business oriented as possible because that's what the best use of this technology is for. So when you are seeking, you know, social interactions, when you're seeking news, when you're seeking anything that basically isn't business and connection in that sense, business relationships, take it offline, make it in person because social media is not going to help you out. We talk about this all the time. There's a lot of negatives. The pros are, you know, networking and marketing and advertising and business and being connected to the world so you can conduct that business. But outside of that, there's not a lot positive. So milk social media for what it's worth. All those things that I just mentioned, use it for it, but don't use it for news. Don't use it to make friends. Don't use it to, you know, just sit there and scroll because that's when you get into the brain rot. That's when you get into the degeneracy. That's when you get into a lot of things we're promoting that are really ruining this generation. And so the way you do that is obviously avoid those things. It's kind of funny, right? We talked about don't avoid, you know, uncomfortable things, but social media is a trap. It's not something that's to your benefit. It's a trap. It lures you in, you know, sucks your attention span, and then you're just there. And the brain rot happens. They promote these degenerate values, and nothing good comes of it. So when you're using this technology, when you're using social media, say, how am I benefiting from this? And if it's not business, it's not connection, it's not networking, if you're being honest with yourself, you'll say, I'm not benefiting from this whatsoever. And that's when it's time to pull the plug and reduce your social media consumption.
Yeah, like you said, we'll keep it pretty simple. I mean, it's not difficult. You know, social media is everywhere and we use it for essentially everything. It's not going away. So like you said, abandoning social media is not very feasible. However, I think there are certain situations where you could essentially delete most, if not all, of your social media. And that is one where, you know, if you're not someone who really like who has anything to put out, you know, if you're not putting out new workouts for people to follow, or you're not, you know, promoting your brand, but you simply just want to learn new things, you know, like, okay, cool. That's fine. But if I think, like you said, if you only use social media to consume, you know, news and whatnot, you don't really need social media. You can just look at other sources on the internet and save yourself some time. Cause you know, once you find one reel, you scroll to another one, and then it just becomes this endless cycle. Whereas if you find an article on the news, you're less likely to find an article and then mindlessly click to the next one because you're actually, you know, reading, taking it in, processing and thinking about it. So there are situations where, I mean, we don't need it, but if you're going to, you know, promote a small business or promote your brand or, you know, put something out there that's of value, it's certainly a useful tool to leverage. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's really, like you said, when it becomes mindless and our For You pages are, they're just infected, you know, with brain rot and violence and sexualization, and we just are subject to overconsumption at this point. And it's really harming the younger generation, especially, you know, the younger kids are, they're getting phones and they're having access to social media. It's killing their minds and the way that they think and the way that they're able to interact with other people. I was working the other day, and these kids came in, and I work at a gym, and these kids came in and they were just yelling and screaming, just, you know, basic brain rot terms that are on social media. And I was just like, yeah, this is really bad. You know, like, it's everywhere. It's just these young kids who have no idea what they're saying. They're just saying it because they saw it on social media. If you want to be a focused individual in the digital age, you really have to be mindful about how much time you're spending on your screen. You know, there's this one quote that I did see on social media that I actually agree with. It's mom was right. It really is that damn phone. Like, it is that phone. You know what I mean? We're on it all the time. Our moms were like, our parents were like, get off your phone. We're like, no, it's fine. And now all we do is scroll, and we don't think, and we're not focused, and we're distracted, which is intentional, but that's for another day. If you want to be focused, you need to put the phone down, or at least limit yourself to when you're picking it up and why you're picking it up. If you're picking it up so you can put something out and then putting it back down, you should really be creating more than you're consuming at the end of the day. That's where the value is. But it's funny, because if everyone thought that way, then social media wouldn't really work, right? If everyone was creating but nobody was consuming, it wouldn't really work. So that's when we say it's a balance, right? It's fine, you know, find recipes or find workouts on, you know, Instagram, that's fine. But it's when it really takes over your mind and sort of takes over your day-to-day life and consumes all your time, that's when we're advocating to really shut it down.
Yeah, the quick metaphor I'll use is, take value away from social media. Don't let social media take value away from you. So what I mean by that, obviously, is, you know, you mentioned recipes, workouts, quotes, stoic lessons. There's so many resources out there that are great on social media. I'm not disparaging, you know, entire social media and saying it's all bad. But take value away from those things instead of focusing on the, like, streamer goes on 20 e-dates. Like, that's garbage. That's brain rot. Doesn't contribute anything. It takes value away from you because it takes away precious time, right? We talk about all the time how Stoics were like, we waste so much time. We act like we have infinite time, the concept of memento mori. There's no bigger time waster than social media. And, you know, time is one of the most valuable things you have, especially as a young person. So don't let social media rob you of that. And that's the final metaphor I will use there. I also have an interesting note. When I go to the rec center a lot, I also see young children who are, you know, saying a lot of brain rot terms and internet terms. So I don't know if it's rec centers or what, but you know, those places are pretty terrible when it comes to interacting with younger children. Not to say all younger children are bad. You know, I'm sure there's ones who aren't, you know, in this influencer culture, internet BS, but the ones at the rec center are something else. Anyway, moving on to our final tip from today, one that might be my personal favorite, start side hustles, and start side hustles that you are passionate about, that you can be consistent with and have a profitable vision. Those are your three markers. Again, I don't know how many times I've said this today, but it feels like a lot. But as a teenager, you have a lot of free time and you have a lot of free resources because you don't have to pay for things. So instead of wasting that money on things that don't matter, use them to invest in yourself by starting side hustles. Also, maybe invest in the stock market, but start side hustles first. That's my advice. Again, not a professional financial advisor or anything. That's my two cents. So especially in the digital age, the internet is such a tool to start side hustles, you know, drop shipping, SEO. There's so many things out there that are just basic side hustles, take very little effort to do and pay off, are very profitable. So if you're not doing those things at this age, and this isn't very philosophical, but if you're not doing these things at this age, then you are missing out on a big opportunity, because then you have a nest egg so that when you're starting out with your career, you have like six figures in the bank. And so you know what you're doing with your life. You have that nest egg, you have that safety net so that you can go out and pursue your passions, right? We talk about, I believe it was a Giovanni, one of the things that limits us from pursuing our passions is the insecurity that creates in us, where we say, well, how am I going to put food on the table? You know, how am I going to pay for where I'm going to live? How am I going to support my family? You know how you don't worry about that? You build that nest egg so that that's how you pay for food on the table while you're working on your passion that maybe isn't making money. So when you have the time to where you don't have to worry about those big picture things like how am I going to take care of my family? How am I going to make money? Then find those side hustles, because then they can provide you that passive income so that when you are facing the choice of, do I want this stable career that I don't care about and I'm not passionate about? Or do I want to take this risk and pursue my passion? You can be comfortable in saying, I want to pursue my passion. So that's why I say start side hustles now, because this is the time when you can afford it. This is the time when it's not stressful to do it. It's fun. You can discover a lot about how the world works, how business works, you know, how money works, how the financial systems work, just by starting these side businesses, just by investing, by looking at like, what's a Roth IRA, by looking at all of these things and becoming informed about them. This is the time to do it, because you're not, you know, you're not losing out on anything. Finding out about this when you're 25, 30, and you have to worry about how you're going to make ends meet, you don't have, like, you can't invest energy into that now. You've missed out. That door has been shut. So, you know, don't let the door hit you on the way out and take advantage of it when you can.
And I think the important thing that we're emphasizing with the money here is it's not having money just to say, you know, you're wealthy and be materialistic. It's having the money so that you can do what you love, right? It's having, because unfortunately, you know, you have to basically buy your freedom. You have to buy your experiences. You have to buy really whatever you want. And that's just how it is. So we're sort of in the game, and really the only way to get out is to win. And winning is becoming financially free. And so that's the importance of having a side hustle, is it allows you to learn, to fail, to succeed, you know, get a little money in the bank, to experience, you know, like you said, I'm just reiterating how the financial systems work, how money works. And then, as we were talking about this before we started recording, it's very easy to find loopholes in the financial system. It's very easy to understand, you know, little hacks here and there that you can use to make you that extra dollar that can be spent towards, you know, traveling or, you know, moving or whatever it is that your goal is. And it's never been easier, right? I mean, we have the internet at the tips of our fingers. We have all these free courses. We have, you know, free trials. I mean, that's such an amazing thing, is the free trial, because if you're quick, you can use a full program that you would have to pay for in 14 days, you know, for free, and then just cancel your subscription and gain that value. Take advantage of those. And I don't know how I feel about saying that on public air, but you know what? Take advantage of them, because I do it all the time. There's nothing wrong with it. There's a free trial. And if you're quick and efficient, then you can gain all the value you need in just those 14 or 7 days of whatnot. But that's just to your point. It's easy. It's not easy. It's easily accessible. You have no reason to say, oh, I can't. Well, you can, because you have the resources. So use them. Don't be lazy. Get off your butt. Hustle a little bit. to the point where you're still able to, you know, have balance in your life, where it's not taking over everything you're doing, but work a little bit, you know, learn, fail, grow, experience, make connections, make some money. And then you'll learn that as you hop into your career, you know what you're good at, you know what you like, you know what you can do. And if you don't like your career, then just turn your side hustle into who you are. Make it not a side hustle. Make it your one and only hustle. Make it your brand. Make it something you're passionate about. Provide the value to the world.
Yeah. And also, you know, if you look at the steps we've previously mentioned, the tips, they're all about perspective building. And so there's going to be people who say, you know, well, oh, some people are more fortunate than others and have the funds, the resources to start side hustles. And I disagree with that. I think every teenager is capable of starting their own side hustle, small business, whatever you want to call it. It's just called, like you said, not being lazy, gaining that perspective in the ways that you can that are feasible to you, and then applying that perspective to your environment and finding the opportunities that present itself to you. Because you're not going to live in an opportunity-less society, right? Your community is not going to say, like, you're not going to live somewhere where there's no opportunity whatsoever for any business. That's ridiculous. So, you know, some businesses are going to be more profitable than others. Obviously, if you're, you know, lucky enough to start out with a wealthy family or something or resources, you're probably going to have more success and more profits. But no matter what your situation is, if you put in a little bit of elbow grease, you put in a little bit of research, you have a little bit of perspective, you'll be able to find some opportunities that are very beneficial to you. I told you about this, Mateo, but my strategy is, you know, I keep a note on my phone. And every time I walk throughout life, every week, I update it every week, and I see something, I'm like, wow, this could be improved, or this is an opportunity. And then boom, I have 20 business opportunities on my phone. It's just something that's effort-based, you know? Everybody has a phone. Everybody has two sets of eyes and a pair of ears, and they can see and hear the opportunities that present themselves within their day-to-day lives. You can see, wow, this could be done more efficiently. Now, do you have the resources to maybe make that solution? No. But you go throughout life and you generate, you know, hundreds of things. You got to settle on one. You'll find one. So it's just having that perspective and having that effort level from a young age. And the final thing I will say about this is that the reason why it's so important to do it young is because you can afford to fail, right? You know, what's the statistic? Like 25% of small businesses survive like the first 10 years or something like that. 45% survive the first five. So in all likelihood, when you start a side hustle, it might fail, especially if you're young and don't have the experience. It probably will fail. But would you rather fail when you know you don't have to pay for rent? You don't have to worry about where my food's going to come from. How am I going to put a roof over my head? You know, what happens if I do fail? Would you rather fail then when you have to worry about all of those things? When you're kind of carefree. Now, obviously, you don't want to be carefree about the business and you want to, like I said, be consistent with it and have that vision of profit. But you want to do it at a time when it's most beneficial for you to do it. And that's when you are young, right? We have this kind of conception in this country now that until you're 22, your focus should primarily be on education, right? You need to go to high school so that you can get your diploma, so that you can apply to college, you go to good college, you get your degree, you work a 9-to-5. That's kind of the track we're on in this country, the Western world is on. But think about, you know, like 100 years ago when you were 18, like you had to be hustling, man. Like when you were 18, boom, you're an adult. Like you're getting married. You have a family. You have people to support. Like it's time to go. So have that mindset now in a society that says that you don't have to be ready to be an adult until you're like 25. Because if you're ready to be an adult at 18 and you're ready to handle those responsibilities, when you're 25 and society says, okay, now it's time to be an adult, you're like, you know what? Fuck it. Like I've got this. Like, I've got this in the bag. Like I've got these habits down. I've got money in the bank. Like I know what I want to do and I'm passionate about it. And I now have the resources to do it. That's ultimately, I think when you add up these seven tips, like that's the mindset you have. And that's the mindset I have right now is like, you know what? Like I've set myself up for success. Like, let's get it, man. Like I'm ready to be an adult. I don't care. Y'all telling me like, I got to be 22. I got to go to college. I got to get my master's, all this BS just so I can work a 9-to-5. Like, no, that's bullshit. Like, get out of here with that. Like I'm ready to be an adult now. I've got money in the bank. Like I've got these habits. Like let's go. And that puts you ahead of so many other people our age who have no clue what they're doing. So you add these seven habits up, boom, you're so far ahead of the rest of our generation and you're so set up for success. And that's why, you know, I get excited about it, but like, I want to see more people like that because when you have people like that who are following their passions, boom, society progresses a lot further than people who are just like, yeah, you know, I want to go work in this office 9-to-5, like whatever. maybe I can afford the suburban home, even though like 30% of our generation can afford homes now. Like, no, reject all of that. Reject the system and work outside of the system, because boom, then you're successful. Then you're financially free, like you mentioned. And once you're financially free, man, life's a dream. Past that point, life's a dream.
It's facts. And I think even if you're not there yet, you know, you're not, oh, I'm ready yet, you know that you're going to be, you know that you're on that track, right? I mean, it's a process. And ultimately what these seven tips boil down to, it's discipline. It's one thing that you can, you know, develop to get these habits and these, you know, these tips that we've laid out in order. It's discipline. That is the underlying thing. And that is the one, you know, sort of characteristic that a lot of people lack is discipline. You know, they stick to one thing for a couple of days and then, yeah, I'm good. You know, they're like, oh, I'm going to quit social media. 2 days later, they're like, oh, I quit for 2 days. You know, it's pretty good. I'm back on. Or they're like, oh, I'm going to really take care of my health, diet for a week. And they're like, yeah, all right, that was cool. You know, we don't wait long enough to really see the results. And that's why a lot of people quit. And, you know, it's been a process for us. We've been on this process for years. I mean, we've been growing and learning and failing and talking to each other and, you know, just bouncing off of each other with ideas for years. You know, the podcast has only been up for about a year and a half now, which is actually kind of insane, but it takes time, right? It's not just going to happen tomorrow. You're not going to wake up and suddenly be like, oh, I can, you'll have motivation, you know, but it's sort of the principle, you know, the night before you set an alarm for 5 a.m. You're like, oh, I'm ready to do this tomorrow. And then you actually wake up at 5 a.m. You're like, yeah, I think I might set it back till 7, right? You're a lot more motivated the night before. And then when you actually have to get your shoes muddy and do it, you're not ready, because it's not about motivation. It's about discipline. And so if you want to get these habits in order, you're going to have to understand that it takes time to detox your brain and to sort of rewire your mindset to be ready and to be resilient and to be hardworking and to, you know, seek discomfort, right? It takes time and it's a mindset. But I love this. And I think if anyone can bounce back from it, it's our generation. If anyone has the ability to make like the ultimate comeback, you know, like the Nuggets should have done in 7, it's our generation, right? It's going to be us, because we are the generation that needs it the most right now. We're the future of this country. And we're sort of coming to this point, you know, where we're turning 18, we're turning into adults, and you're either going to go down two roads. One, you're going to pick yourself up and you're going to move forward and you're going to become that better individual. You're going to fulfill your potential, or you're going to keep doing what you're doing. And in 5 years, life's going to slap you in the face. And you're not going to be able to get back up because you didn't develop habits early on. So that's sort of my last piece of advice, is for these seven tips, discipline yourself, sit down with yourself and really ask yourself how bad you want it. And if you want it bad enough, these seven tips will change your life as they have ours, and there will still be struggle. Actually, there will probably be more struggle than when you know, were sitting around on your phone, because you're not doing anything. And when you actually start trying really hard, you struggle more, but it's more rewarding if you can push through it, because there's a lot more results yielding, you know, from the process. So
I'll use one metaphor to sum up basically what you said. When you have climbed a mountaintop, right, and you see, This might be a little bit morbid for people, but like, you climb Mount Everest and you see the dead hikers around you, and you're at the top of the mountain and you see all of that. You realize like the value of all the struggle you went through. You realize like how rewarding it was, versus if you're sitting there at the bottom and you see all those hikers and you're like, why did they waste their time doing that? But it requires you to take that steps up the mountain to realize the value, so that when you're at the top, when you've made it, you look around and you see all the struggles you had, all the failures you had, all the challenges you had, and you're like, wow, this was really worth it. Like, this made my journey special. And so these habits, your life really depends on it. Because like you said, there's two paths. You can follow the conditioned path, which says, get your diploma, get your degree, work an office job, have enough to scoot by, boom, done. Modern factory worker. Or you can say, I want my life to be truly special. I want to make change. I want to make something happen. And the way you do that is building these habits. It doesn't have to be these seven habits, but building habits. That's why I say these habits, like, your life depends on it, because they choose the path for you. You choose your habits and your habits choose your life path. So choose the right ones. And if you think our advice is valuable, follow these seven tips. With that being said, this has been this week's episode of the Gen Z Stoic Podcast. I've been your co-host, Ren.
And I've been your co-host, Mateo. And we will see you all next week.